Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts. Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel, and Ben Kingsley, Chair of Property Investment Professionals of Australia, and the 2014 and 2015 Property Investment Advisor of the Year.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch, your insider's guide to property investing. I'm Bryce Holdaway, because he's Ben Kingsley. Hey, we've been getting heaps of Q&A, which has been fantastic.
Love them.
Helps us understand what our listeners want to know. So we're going to fly through some today to see if we can cover off some good ones as you have a little sip of your drink after a little cough. So all right, I'll kick it off.
Yes.
From Aaron. Finance related. Hi guys, could you possibly talk about entry into the property investment market? Specifically, how much money do you need? I have 20 grand sitting in a term deposit, but I've heard that you need more like 40,000 before you can even look at starting out. If that's true, then I need to keep saving. But I keep thinking to myself, what if it's better to start investing that 20,000 in cheaper property so that you can start investing at 24 rather than 27? How much money should people have before starting? I get this question a lot, so I think it's a really good
one. It's a cracking question. Mm. And effectively, you might have a great income, which is good for borrowing power, but if you don't have a deposit, then technically you don't have what we call purchasing power. So when you have that purchasing power, what we're referring to is either savings or equity in a property. Mm. So one of the things that Aaron could also consider is maybe talking to his parents, because you can use security guarantee and get into the investment side. So there's some lenders out there, and excuse me, as I clear my throat, but there's some lenders out there who will allow you to use other security to get into the market. So if you've got really strong income, but you're still saving up, because the earlier you get into the market, usually the better.
Mm. Yeah, time is your friend. Think about the three C's, Aaron, of lending: capacity, collateral, and character. So capacity is what Ben talked about in terms of your income. Collateral is how much equity do you have, and character is, are you a good credit risk to the bank? You know, does your credit score or does your credit file have heaps of hits on it, or is it pretty clean? As a rough rule of thumb, if you're going to put in a 20% deposit, and there are variations to that, for every $100,000 worth of property you're buying, you need 26,000, 26% roughly. So for 200,000, you need 52,000 and so on. Now that's assuming you don't go into mortgage insurance territory, Ben.
Yeah, that's right. So, and I think the other point we'll make mention here is, yeah, look, so if you've got a $20,000 deposit, you can borrow up to 95%. So there are still some lenders out there who will do investment lending at 95%. So you've still got to cover the mortgage insurance, which is the insurance policy protecting the bank, not protecting you from, you know, the deal going sour. So from that point of view, it's really important to understand that, yes, you could get into, say, you know, as an example, maybe a $120,000, $130,000, $150,000 property at that low deposit level. Everyone's going, where the hell do I find $120,000 property? But there are marketplaces around Australia that you can find those types of opportunity, and they can be in some of our bigger regional areas. Mm. You might even be able to look around and find some studio apartments in the city areas, but buyer beware. You've heard us talk before about studio apartments. They're not mainstream, they don't perform as well, they give a nice income, but effectively you can almost write off capital growth because they don't have that owner-occupier appeal.
So there's a couple of things here, Aaron. The earlier you start, the better, which is true, but you don't want to get into the market just to get into the market without it being investment grade. So again, going back to that, that analogy, if you have a 20% deposit, you need roughly 20% plus costs, so rough rule of thumb, 5 or 6%. So for every 100,000 purchase, you need 25, 26,000. So for 300,000, you need, what's that, 70, can I do my maths quickly in my head, 78,000.
Mm-hmm.
If you go and speak to mum and dad, well, then you can fast track that. If you go into mortgage insurance territory, you can actually leverage higher, but don't forget that some of your capital needs to pay for the mortgage insurance premium.
Yes.
Also.
Yeah. If you're going to the higher LVR, that's right.
So how much money do you need before starting? Let's think typically a $400,000 property, 20% deposit, you need $80,000 for your deposit. You need to also have, say, 5%, call it, for stamp duty and costs. So you need to have 20,000.
So all up, about 100 grand. Yeah. Now, that being said, you know, he'd be thinking, well, I can't get into property until I'm in my mid-30s. So, Aaron, you're right. If you're really keen to get into the property market and you understand your risks associated with that, a nice rule of thumb is, you know, or a safer bet is around 10%. Okay, yep. So you know, a 90% LVR we feel comfortable with. If you want to be a little bit more aggressive, and yes, you are young, so you know, if something doesn't go well, you've got time to recover. But ultimately, you know, a good rule of thumb is if I was getting into an investment property, I actually don't mind paying that LMI premium. And you've got a good, you know, sort of theory on that. It's like embrace it when you need to, avoid it when you can. And that's basically the principle there. So I don't mind it. It's tax deductible over 5 years. So if I've got that position to get into a market play, ultimately I'm going to get the return on that over a long period of time. So, you know, the sooner you act, if everything's equal, the greater the wealth will be. So if you want to start at 24, I commend you on that. And yeah, if you wait 3 or 4 years, the reality is that that's very hard to catch up.
What's the back of napkin on that? So 400,000, 90% means they'll lend 360, so they've got to kick in 40, plus stamp duty costs, which is 20 again, so there's 60. Yep. How much for mortgage? So it's pretty roughly, I know you have
got a calculator in here. Off the spot in terms of for 10%, 400, 360, probably maybe six to eight grand. That's a guess, guys.
Yeah, we'd have to confirm that. I put him on the spot. There's no, he doesn't have a calculator. So 6 to 8. So you've got your 40.
But at 90% you can capitalise that.
Yes.
So whereas at 95, it's very hard to capitalise that into the loan. So for listeners new to lending, what capitalising means is that if you get that loan to value ratio as a percentage of the value of the home, and then they'll let you capitalise over that 90%. So it might be, call it $8,000. You'll add that to it. So rather than having to find that extra $8,000 in savings, it'll just be added to the loan. So this is what we were talking about before about what is purchasing power. A lot of people come to a bank and they go, I've got all this income, so let me buy an $800,000 property. And they go, yeah, you do have some wonderful income, but you've got no collateral. You've got no savings. You've got nothing to back it up. So what you do have is a $50,000 deposit. So even though you could service a bigger loan, you could effectively only buy a property around that $400,000-$450,000 mark. So that's where the value of talking to family, because it doesn't just have to be your mum and dad, you can get security guarantees from related parties. Now they've got to understand they're going to be guarantors and there's risks associated with that. So you need to speak to your savvy property, a mortgage broker, your investment savvy. I stumbled through that, didn't I? Investment savvy mortgage broker.
Hey, our listeners know you're a Collingwood supporter, so they make allowances.
Well, it's hard to talk through this sort of teethless front. I keep lifting. Okay, so that's sort of how you do it. So you've got to make sure that they're the components. So, of course, we all want to get really quick growth because that's some of the equity we can use to go again. And all going well, that's obviously the science of property investing.
So there you go, Aaron. I always say that investment property is a game of finance, not a game of bricks and mortar. So we love finance-related questions. So anyone wants to send those. Hope that helped, Aaron. Let us know if it did. We'd love to hear from you.
Okay, the next question we've got, we've actually put two of them together because they're relating to the same thing. So I've got a question from Marty and also from Mitch. I've just finished your book and have reached the end with my number one question unanswered. So I hope you can assist, as Bryce is having a cough like I have. I think it's in the air.
It's contagious.
It's contagious. Your charts in the case study suggest interest-only loans, but the graphs show debt reductions. Whilst I have not crunched the numbers, it appears that the debt payoff strategy is missing. Or did I miss something? So I'll come back to the book and that point. And then, hi guys, love the podcast and your book. Just a quick question about paying debt down to start receiving passive income. In your book, you say to set up all loans in interest only. If you want to retire on passive income at the age of 40, how do I pay down debt without selling any properties and without access to my superannuation? Sorry for the long-winded question. It's not a long-winded question at all. These are really important points. Bryce.
Yeah, no, really good. So the point is that you don't have to pay down debt. Now, the nirvana is that you would like to pay down debt, but some people just won't be in a position to do that. So the point is, some of the scenarios in the book do pay down debt, and some of the scenarios still have residual debt whilst they're enjoying their $2,000 per week. Now, the point is that $2,000 per week is over and above all of the costs to service the portfolio. So that's still blue sky. That's clear money, that's cash in your pocket. So that if you're controlling a portfolio that allows you to pull out a passive income while still servicing the debt, there's no requirement to pay down the debt just for paying down debt's sake. Now, let's talk about the elephant in the room. Everyone wants to pay down debt because it makes them feel more comfortable and a bit more warm and fuzzy. But some people, if they start early, have longer till their retirement, so they can actually fill up their offset account so they have paid off the equivalent of the debt, versus people who start later. We don't want to discriminate against those people and say it can't be done. So they can still enjoy the passive income, but they might not necessarily pay it down. I like the way that you described it when we did the CPA talk, because you build live portfolios in front of audiences all the time.
Yep.
And I remember the one time we were in Sydney, and you said, look, and we did the simulator and showed them that you could sell a property, debt would be gone, but your point was, why would you? Why would you sell the goose that lays the golden egg whilst you continue to get this capital base?
That's right. And can I get a little technical?
Oh, mate, love you to.
All right, here we go. I'm getting a little technical, listeners. The models that we build, we've built and designed them so the loans are interest only. Now, the reason why the loans are interest only is it means that you're not paying principal down, which means that you've got better cash flows. Okay, so Bryce was talking about in terms of buckets. So if you can imagine two buckets next to each other, and you've got the loan bucket, and then you've got the offset bucket that's basically next to that. So how our simulation models work when we're building these strategies is that the $100,000 loan, once there's $100,000 in savings in the offset bucket, the model then finds another bucket to fill. So it's say, let's say you've got multiple debts against these properties, it continues to fill those up. So the question that you ask here, Marty, around do you become debt free? The answer to that is yes. And when we show in the tables where the debt position is, that's a calculation of all of the loans less the money we've got in the offset. Okay, so I'll say that again. It's all of the loans less the money we've got in the offset. So if money is sitting in an offset against the loan, there is no interest. So if we had $100,000 and $90,000 in the offset that night, interest is calculated only on $10,000. First point. Second point, Bryce is right, and this is where we do get technical. So when we build a strategy, what we're saying, and in this case, it's $2,000 a week, so it's $104,000 a year. The model works like this. It's basically saying at the age of X, let's call it 60, that we're generating a passive income of $104,000. So that's where you're turning off your income that you're working for, and the system is trying to find that $104,000. Now, in addition to that $104,000, if there's still some remaining debt, it's also finding that money to service that debt, which is what Bryce was talking about before. And then finally, how sophisticated our model is, it's also finding 1.5% of the value of the property at that time to allocate for maintenance and ongoing holding costs. So if you think of it like that, it's discretionary spending of $104,000. You've got whatever debt's left over. The system is finding that money and paying it. And then ultimately, it's preserving this extra cash for replacing the hot water system or paying the rates and so forth. So that's how it works. And we've got some excellent videos in terms of that. But if our listeners are saying, can you build another video and show us how that works, I'll be happy to do that. But that's effectively what's happening. So come back to your point, Bryce, finishing off the technical part is, yeah, I mean, if your property portfolio can generate $104,000 for you in today's dollar terms, but also service the remaining debt and eventually pay that down, because over time the property values are growing and so is the rental income that you're charging on those properties. So over time all the debt is paid off. But the way in which we wrote the book was to try and say to people at different time phases of their life in different circumstances for those particular types of people is that you can still have your $104,000 and you can still have a little bit of debt left over. But if we did a time frame of another 10 or 15 years, the majority or if not all of that debt will be paid off. So the earlier you start, the more likely that your debt is going to be paid off. But the later you start, it's okay to still have a bit of that debt. So you've got a choice of never selling the properties, or if we have to sell one down to release a lot more surplus cash to live off for the next 10 years whilst we're active, we can do that. For me, very technical.
Very technical, but I think it's good, because I think it's kind of, for me, when you and I chatted many, many years ago, that for me was the nirvana, because you've really got two camps in Australia. You've got the live off equity, get debt to service debt camp, and then you've got the other side of the equation that says passive income. From day one, I've got to find properties that are, you know, earning me an income. We're actually sort of the hybrid in the middle, where we say we're in the debt off debt equity camp in terms of asset selection. We want the growth properties, but we're also in the positive cash flow camp, where we want to be able to live off that. But our view is, instead of sort of building this massive empire of 10 plus properties, you know, weekend warrior, renovators, all that sort of stuff, we say clever asset selection, clever debt structure, so that you can pay off the principal place of residence. And in most cases, and it's a generalization, but in most cases, we don't build plans with more than three to five investment properties in them. And the number one goal is debt retirement. I think it's unique. I think it's very, very unique, and I think that's what can give our people who read our book comfort, that we're not sort of suggesting that you're going to do something that's really going to give you a white knuckle, waking up in sweats, all that sort of stuff.
And I think that's what doing sophisticated cash flow does, Bryce. Mm. It's about lying in bed, as you're saying, not worrying about debt. You know, there's that famous, you know, quote about the kids in the playground. You know, my dad's poor, he owes the bank $200,000, or my dad's rich, he owes the bank $2 million. Mm. Because the relativity of that $2 million against maybe a $10 million asset base compared to, say, a $200,000 loan maybe against a $300,000 property. So over time, that takes shape. If I could just finish off for Marty and to Mitch, we've got to understand investing is the process. And what we're talking about here is there's an accumulation phase where we're acquiring these assets when you can afford to acquire them, based on the capital growth and the rental yield that meets your cash flow needs at that time. And then effectively, that's enough. And then for the next 5 or 10 years before we finish off retiring, we really are focused on building up those offsets. So we could pay into the loan if we wanted to, but we're just building up that cash in an offset bucket. And that's what we do in our models in the book.
The culture is that you're going to keep buying more and more property. So the exciting thing for a client, you know, I see clients all the time, I fulfill their plans. And we're now sort of on some clients, we go we're up on the third property, they got the prison. And they go, so what do we do after we bought this property? It's like, nothing.
Yeah,
there's no more to buy. If your plan is going to be fulfilled, because we've done very conservative assumptions on interest rates, we've done very conservative assumptions on depreciation, because we put zero in there, we're conservative on your maintenance, you've now bought the properties, we've been conservative on capital growth, there's nothing more to do. And you can see their mind just going, but the magazine say I should keep buying, you know.
But I like this. You've created a monster. This is a hobby for us now. It's not good, but you don't have to. But they might want to, you know, they might want to have another one. That's up to them.
They could come back and we can, if they're shooting for $2,000 a week, they might want to shoot for $3,000 a week. And then you would need to buy some more assets.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I always think, you know, I quote Tim Ferriss all the time. He reminds me in the 4-Hour Workweek that really what we're trying to do is we're trying to be time rich and experience rich.
Oh, nice.
And if you have $2,000 a week in this country, you can be both of those, time rich and experience rich, because you can go and do some stuff. You don't have to you decide to roll out or roll over each morning. That's significant. So let's not lose sight of the fact that most of the sizzle is sold on a Porsche, a Learjet, a laptop, in Europe. Most people don't want that. They just want their time and their experiences back.
And if I could, typical me, I always need to add something in the end. For all of our high net worth listeners and our high income earners, they might be on, say, $200,000 or more. The goal for us in those types of plans is to actually replace your income. So, $100,000 for them, they're like, how do I live on $100,000? Whereas some people we know live on $17,000 a year. Some of them are like, how do I live on, that's like half my salary.
That's my wife's shoe budget.
Not
my wife's shoe budget. That was a quote.
But that's the point we're making. Yeah. So for those people who come in, and we've got clients, on $700,000 to $1 million a year as clients, they want that replaced. Mm. So we're going to be doing more with them, and potentially the assets that we buy for them are significantly different to some of the assets we have to buy for some other clients.
You'd find this too, Ben. One of the first questions I ask when a client comes and chats to me is, what's the point? Why are we here? Why are we having this chat? And they kind of have that, I want financial freedom. I don't want to work. I said, but what does that mean? And it's because we do a fact find and understand how money moves under their roof. We can actually show them how much money they need to actually keep their lifestyle today exactly the same without having to go to work.
Yep.
And quite often they're surprised because, like you said, they could be on $200,000, but when they work out, once they're paying off their principal place of residence and they've got all these commitments with
the private school fees,
they're going to be properties.
Gone eventually. Yep.
Once all that's gone,
yep.
They work out that to live comfortably like now, they only need $60,000.
Yep.
And then, of course, when you want some more experiences, you need a bit more money. So they might be quite comfortable on $90,000 in today's dollars, even though they earn $200,000.
Yep.
So that's
a good point.
That's important for our listeners to know that if you don't know what your current lifestyle costs you, taking away all of your loan commitments and your investment commitments, just your bills and your discretionary spending, if you don't know what that is, I'd make it a priority to know what it is because it's going to help you define your goal.
Agreed, and here's a little tip for you. You can also work out, if you're doing some nice spreadsheeting, when the kids are going to leave home. So a nice rule of thumb might be 25 years of age, and then you can take off around $300 to $500 a month in the costs of looking after those children. And then all of a sudden it's like, wow, that is all we need. Now there might be, well, okay, that's good, but we have been sacrificing and I really would like a $25,000 a year holiday budget. Okay, put it back on. And then that gives you your baseline. And it's really that. I mean, we obviously are trying to outperform and get the best results for our clients, but if they're, you know, it's good karma for them to sort of know exactly where they sit in regards to their circumstances. And that's that clarity of, right, now we know our end game, let's try and build towards that.
Hopefully that's the takeaway people get from today's podcast. Define what your end game is so that you can actually reverse engineer. So
thanks, Marty. Thanks, Mitch. That was a really good. We opened that right up, that Pandora's box. Ended
That's unlike us to go on a tangent, mate. All right, so we've got Rob who sent us in an email, finding an investment. Hi, guys, love the podcast. I'm an avid listener after finding you. Went back to F1 and went through them all. Just about to place an order for the book. Great. Fundamental question, is a house and land package always a bad investment or are there situations it can work as an investment property?
Look, that's an interesting question. And I was daydreaming. So you probably know.
that's hear that, Ives. Ben's just admitting he doesn't listen to me. But the question's about house and land packages. So is it a bad investment? But I would say this, because I want to be very careful with my answer for this. I'll be interested to see what yours is. In my early part of career, I helped people buy brand new properties.
Yes.
From 2007 to present, I haven't helped someone buy a brand new property with a couple of exceptions. If it was on the show.
Yes.
For them to, or if it's their PPR.
Yep.
Or if they were required by the government to buy it.
Foreign investment.
Foreign investment review board.
Yep.
Outside of those things, I have not recommended anyone buy brand new. Going forward, I won't recommend anyone buys brand new and I won't do it myself. It's probably
that's a nice summary. And for me, we're all about increasing probability of returns. Okay, so if property investment was a perfect science and we could predict perfectly what every property in this country would do over a 20, 50 year period, the game would be up and we'd all be rich and we'd all be, you know, on the beach somewhere in the Bahamas. The reality is that's not the case. So if we go to trying to increase our probability of a better return, we come back to the basics. And the basics are scarcity. And if there is a house and land package, how much vacant land is around you? Because that land has to be fully utilized, number one, before we actually start to see growth in that area. Unless we're talking about a mining town where there's an enormous economic boom happening in that area and that accommodation needs to be built as quick as possible. And that's a shortage of accommodation because of the time at that moment in time. But that's where you get that fluctuality from, that volatility from. So coming back to the basics, most house and land packages are being built in new areas, new estates, and that land is usually on the fringe of the city. And if you do the demographic overlays, it's usually where the lower incomes are and where people who are just getting into the workforce are just starting out. Now, if they're just starting out, and let's say, I mean, we've been blessed in this country, 25 years positive economic growth, but we haven't seen a recession for a long time. But let's say those people, times are tough. The entry-level workers are usually the ones that get laid off first. And so that's where you normally see higher mortgage delinquent rates. If you were to study delinquent rates around the country, they would normally be in clusters of new areas when times are tough. So we're trying to reduce the probability of getting burnt and trying to increase the probability of getting a great result. So from my point of view, that's why we have traditionally gone to existing homes where we've got proven resales in areas that are fully utilised in terms of their land availability and have decent infrastructure and good demographic profiles.
Think about a rock dropping in the pond. The circle's very close at the source of the rock, and as it goes further and further, the circle's really large. So it's just more and more people as you go further out wide. Beware, you put a video out, Ben, we might put that up on the website about Fool's Gold.
Sure.
Because quite often the house and land packages are built on, used to be just an old paddock.
Yep.
And so in the first year, the growth rates look phenomenal, 20%+ growth, because they're coming from a very low base. And that's often what's sold. What else? There's the depreciation. No one pays a dollar to get 30 cents back.
Yeah.
And of course, rental guarantees exist out there. So, Rob, I know your question is largely around that's all I can afford, and that's why I would consider it. But I would suggest to you that I would prefer to potentially chase for your same money going closer into one of the major cities and buying, you know, a one-bedroom flat. Not a one-bedroom apartment, but a one-bedroom flat with the same amount of money versus probably buy a house and land package for the same price.
Definitely. And if you really are adventurous and become the borderless investor that we're hoping you'll eventually be, there will be cities around Australia where for that type of money, you can actually get a beautiful home, you know, that's been standing for 80 or 100 years. And you might think, well, but wait a minute, that whole economy is not going so well. Remember, you're buying one investment property. And if you buy it in a really great location, there's usually enough people in that area who are doctors, lawyers, whatever it may be. If that's a really nice street and it's got high status, that if you actually look at the historical performance of that particular property being a nice home, you might be surprised. It might have done 8% over the long term. Well, that's a good buy.
Hmm.
You know, that's the type of confidence we need. And yet that city or whatever might have been, you know, had periods in the 80s where it was really sluggish, but it still delivered really, really well. So they're the really important messages here in terms of, you know, in the media and in the noise environment that we're in property, it's all about cities and you know, big commentary, and it doesn't need to be. I mean, the science and the precision of what we're doing is we can't buy, there's no index for Melbourne, there's no index for Sydney property. So the reality is, you've got to buy an asset that has scarcity and that people want to live in. So you go back to the fundamentals, owner-occupier appeal, you know, great location, good safe demographics, good infrastructure, those types of things, good age group of the people in that area, and you'll be amazed in terms of that property will perform well. And even from a rental point of view, there will be people who might be living in that area as locum doctors for the next 2 or 3 years. They will rent that home, you know, because they also want to be in the nice area and they can afford to be in the nice area.
Yeah.
So it's really about changing this broad mindset around how property analysis and commentary is done and getting into the granular to make sure you get the best results.
Some nuggets of gold there, mate. I don't know. I've just got a little tip for you. Maybe you should consider doing this for a living.
I'll try.
Knowledge is knowing it's a one-way street. Wisdom is knowing to look both ways anyway.
Go again. I want that one again. I love it.
Knowledge is knowing it's a one-way street. Wisdom is knowing you still should look anyway. So it's knowledge is not just enough. And that's probably what these house and land people preach on. It's the knowledge that it is an investment property, but it's the wisdom to be able to choose which one makes for a great investment. Wow, there we go. So mate, I thought we'd get through a few more Q&As in half an hour than that, but we've really embellished.
Well, you know what we're like. Is there a quick little one that we can answer quickly, or is that it?
Mate, I think a lot of our listeners go to the office on the train, driving the car, so we might stick to half an hour.
We'll cover
them off in a future episode. But
I just want to keep educating people, Bryce, you know me.
we'll probably get written in for me to stop cutting you off to go.
That's not true.
Mate, so I noticed that you're fully prepared right now for, as you scramble for your piece of paper. And, of course, our book, For those of you who have read the book, thank you for the wonderful feedback. Look, to be honest, if you love our podcast, the book's going to, it's like herding the cats. It brings it all together for you so that you've got a comprehensive guide. And of course, you can see those five case studies at the end. So if you go to thepropertycouch.com.au/book, and we'll give you a discount as being our loyal listener community. Put in the coupon code TPC, uppercase, lowercase, you choose, and we'll give you that discount. So Ben, as we sign off,
yeah, so we've had a request for a sign-off of all things from, is it Glenn Platt or Pat?
Yep, Glenn Pat.
Yeah, double T, beautiful. Didn't know whether it was LT. Egyptian.
Egyptian.
Arabic. Ooh. Arabic Egyptian.
So let's coach you, all right?
Well,
so yeah. pretend you're not talking to your five-year-old son.
No, I have
to. And pretend you're not talking to someone who wants to...
Well, I could do the cheat. I could do the cheat, an easy one on this piece of paper that just says, bye.
Yeah.
Right, but we'll try the harder one, and this is why I have to, you know, sort of spell it out in my head.
Uh-huh.
Malis Salama.
Ooh, I'm happy with that.
Malis Salama.
Yeah?
Salama. Malis Salama.
No croissant in sight.
You can see how I prep.
No,
you can see how I prep.
There's no childcare in sight.
There's big prep in that. Yeah. And if you want to see me spell it, it's a bit of scribble.
I think we need Google.
In Arabic.
We'll get Google Translate. That'll be our soon sign off. But there you go, folks. In Arabic, it's Mais Salama.
Salama. Mais
Salama. So until next week, folks, Mais Salama. See you
later.
Bye now.